Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And I do think overall that the potential is there for artificial intelligence, AI, to have most likely a positive effect and to create a future of abundance where there is no scarcity of goods and services. But it is somewhat the magic genie problem, where if you have a magic genie that can grant all the wishes, usually those stories don't end well.
This is the Debunking Economics Podcast with Steve Keen and Phil Dobby.
So how will it all end for Elon Musk, a multi-billionaire with his fingers in many pies, SpaceX, Tesla, social media, AI? Is there any stopping him? And is he good or bad for the planet? Well, he wants to take us off the planet to experience life on Mars, where it's the freakiest show, as the song goes. So, Elon Musk, Steve is a fanboy. I'm not so sure, but what can we learn from him? That's today on the Debunking Economics Podcast. So, a very brief biography of Elon Musk, very brief. He was born in South Africa. His parents were loaded, and to his credit, his dad was a politician who opposed apartheid. Musk moved to Canada, taking out his citizenship before going to university in the US, studying economics and physics before dropping out of Harvard after just two days to start a software company called Zip2, which made online city guides with at least $200,000 in seed money coming from his dad, who he doesn't talk to anymore. Thanks, Dad. He was bought by Compaq Computers, or his company was, for $300 million 4 years later. This was 1999. And he started a bank called X.com. Yes, that letter X, which would eventually become PayPal, which was sold to eBay for, well, this is where he made his money, $1.5 billion in 2002. And he used $100 million of that money to set up SpaceX. 2 years later, he became an early investor in Tesla, then became its chairman, then CEO, and then principal architect. Since then, of course, well, he's had his fingers in many pies. Hyperloop, Starlink, the low-orbit satellites, the Boring Company, which makes tunnels, OpenAI, and Neuralink, which links brains to computers. And, of course, he is doing his best to destroy Twitter as well. Despite all of this genius, he clearly can't figure out how to put on a condom because he's got 10 children through various women, some of which he was married to, some of which he wasn't, and none of which he is currently married to. So, Steve, is he a genius or is he just a bit of a twat? Or is he... he can be both, of course. But you love him, don't you?
He can be both. And this is the thing that I find... And I've got a lot of friends who are very anti-Musk and others very pro. Some ending up in what... You know, this is, you see a lot of YouTubers who are fundamentally Muskovites in that sense. And others who criticize him for his personal attribution. Now, I think Musk... He did it badly because he's a terrible actor. But he did it... well, in the sense he actually said it on Saturday Night Live when he hosted the show. He said, you wanted me to do all this and be normal?
Yeah.
So to actually end up doing the crazy creative things that he's done, the very nature, the very sort of personality you've got to have to do that makes you different.
But he is a and loose cannon, that's for sure, isn't he?
Loose cannon. He's also, what's his Asperger's
disease?
Did you mention Asperger in the introduction?
No, I didn't mention it in the intro, but yeah, absolutely. That's part and parcel. You know, some people would say it is a benefit. But I mean, is he a man with good ideas or crazy ideas? So some of his ideas work, some of his ideas don't, obviously.
But the thing is, the ideas that he has had that I have immense respect for are rockets that land on their asses, and people have no idea how complicated that is. Not saying that he did the mathematics to work out the equation that managed to have that happen, but to have the objective that occurs reduces the cost of space travel by between one and two orders of magnitude. And that is huge in terms of our capacity ultimately to get off planet, which is something, and we'll talk about that in the rest of the show.
You see, that was done, years ago on Thunderbirds. I grew up watching rockets.
Exactly.
I'm sure that's where it got it from. And I can see why you like it as well, because he's a big fan of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So, you know.
Well, that's important. I feel like you don't understand that. I don't care how weird you are. If you don't like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you're not in my universe. But if you look at what he's done with his money, let's compare him to the top rank entrepreneurs. This is what people do. Look, one of my best mates in Australia is totally anti-Musk and says he won't buy. He's a petrol head who won't buy a Musk electric car because it's made by Musk. Right.
Well, put me in that camp because I've just bought a Volvo electric, and I could have bought a Tesla. But I chose Volvo because it's not a Tesla. Mm. I mean,
there you go. Okay.
But also, actually, and this is sort of my point. I'm sorry interrupting your point. We're going off at a tangent already.
This is a tangential topic.
It is a tangential topic. We will be all over the place today. But I didn't buy a Tesla because actually they strangely look a little bit outdated now. I mean, there's a lot more style to the new Volvos than there is to Tesla. I got in a Tesla and I thought, is that it? It just looks a bit empty in here. And the gadgetry and sophistication within the Volvo now is probably just as good, if not better, and performs just as well as the Tesla. So he's lost some of his edge.
Well, and this is also partly design philosophy, absolute minimalism. One of his favorite sayings is the best part is no part. And to some extent, saying, hey, everything you need is in the console. What else do you need on the? But that also can allow some cheap construction, which I've seen people complain about in some videos on it and so on. And also, like, we've got used to the idea of flashy dials being what gives you the idea of a top user interface. Now, again, one example that one of my friends complains about, and I can understand why. You've got to go through the screen to open the glove box. I said, but think of this, the best part is no part. There's no button needed, but there's something which enabled you to do it in one touch rather than two, because you had to do something on the screen, then you got the glove box. And so there's elements like that. Yes, I can agree with people complaining about those issues. But I want to come back to let's put him in context, and context means billionaires. So what billionaires could we compare him to? Warren Musk. Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, yeah.
Okay. Brilliant stock.
There's a love child.
Brilliant stock market work, and basically going against the efficient markets hypothesis because he said, if that's right, I can't make money. It's wrong, so I'll make money. And he definitely won that particular argument. Gates, who gave us Microsoft, and I'll come back to Gates in a moment about whether he was particularly creative in what he did there or not. Bezos, okay, for Amazon, and Zuckerberg, and then Musk. So let's try those five. Now, what is one thing which then makes Musk completely different to those other four?
Well, I mean, the others had a great idea and then just went with it. So setting up Windows,
manufacturing,
and building up Microsoft.
Manufacturing.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, yeah, I mean, he's moved into many different
areas.
He's
the only entrepreneur who's come up with new ideas in manufacturing.
And builds them.
Yeah, Now, how many? Okay, you mentioned Tesla, of course, electric cars. Now, he didn't start the Tesla company, and there's all sorts of controversy over what happened inside there. I tend to lean with his interpretation rather than the others, but that's by the by. SpaceX, and that's rockets came about because he went to buy them off the Russians. I think he had a Russian spit on his shoe. I think that's the story. And then he worked back on the way back that if they could potentially manufacture themselves, and since we now have by far the world's most successful rocket company, the Boring Company, which is very trivial penetration into the market so far, but it's something essential about it, which again I'll get on to try to put
that was the Boring Company, which was really to dig the tunnels for his Hyperloop, wasn't it? Wasn't that a big part of the motivation?
That was one potential, but the Hyperloop was also supposed to go above ground, but the Hyperloop hasn't gone, and pardon the pun, hasn't gone anywhere. There's one Chinese company which is getting close to it, but the tolerances involved in that I think are crazy, particularly on a planet with tectonic plate movements. I can't see how they could build it to cope. But the Boring Company is essential for something else we haven't yet mentioned. And then the robot, he's now working on the Tesla Optimus, it's called at the moment, which is by far, far from the first robot, but it's the first one with 11 degrees of freedom for its hands. in the fact that, and I don't know how you, I mean, you'd need to see the mathematics to say, well, they say 11 degrees, all the different ways the fingers and the joints and wrists and thumbs can move. But it means he's got hands which have identical functionality and design to a human hand, whereas the other rival company in that spectrum, which is the, and I've got to think of its name now, the one with the jumping, leaping, spinning robot and the dog, Boston Dynamics, it has a three-fingered hand, and all three are opposable, which is another way of going about it, but it's not the same physical dexterity and physical shape as a human hand.
Right. So he's developed the first robot that can masturbate, is what you're saying, basically.
Well, I mean, he doesn't do it himself. He's got too many girlfriends. But that's a feasible interpretation. So that's not just one physical thing, but four significant physical inventions that he's made, and the manufacturing involved. None of the others have done that. So is he doing this himself?
How much of this, or is he coming up with the idea? What's his expertise?
It has to be a bit of both, because you've got to be able to answer the engineering questions. And this front, if you want to get a good handle on it from somebody who's a consummate engineer, there's a guy, I can't think of his last name right now, but Sandy, who's a famous American motor engineer who's worked for numerous companies and has been for a long, long time. He's the design studio that most of the other companies go to get their ideas vetted and analyzed and so on. And he's blown away with the level of knowledge that Musk has from his engineering. And this came back to one of my obsessions. We need this country, we need a planet run by engineers, not by bloody economists, politicians, and lawyers.
Well, so here's the interesting thing. So he did physics, didn't he, at degree level? He didn't go beyond degree, and he studied economics as well. So he studied those two subjects.
It was a mistake.
He certainly got the hang of one of them, but not the other one, I think.
Well, he has in one sense, and the fact that he also has to work out what the break-even point is and whether you can get down to the stage where you can build a factory that produces output and is profitable, because it has to be able to produce more than the break-even point and market that amount.
My kids are under 16. They did break-even point for their GCSEs. So, you know, that's relatively. You don't need 3 years to work out.
But the engineering, you have to have a fair degree of engineering knowledge not to, pardon the French, can't you just fuck up on this program?
Yeah, we might as well go for broke. We've already talked about masturbation, so, you know, this week.
You can have somebody who doesn't understand the engineering fucking up what the engineers end up doing. Mm. And I've seen that in the software industry so many times. So my favorite example there is the guy who gave us the world's first personal level relational database was Wayne Ratliff, who was a NASA engineer who wrote DBase, as it was known, DBase 2. Literally as a way to make money out of the football pools. He thought of artificial intelligence back in the late 1970s, early 1980s. And his company was his product was dominated the market and was screwed completely by a bunch of managers who said, no, don't try to improve the relational side of the thing. Just add more databases. DBase is now dead. The program Ratliff wanted to make never got commercial grounding. But he was making the right decision. And when I met him, back in the days when I was a computer journalist, he was fuming about bloody MBAs and what they do to manufacturing companies or to design centers like designing software. So Musk has to have the engineering nous to listen to his engineers properly and make the right decisions, even if he doesn't do the mathematics himself, which to a fair degree I understand he does have the capability for. So what you've had is successful, and this is the first successful new car company, certainly in America, the first in almost a century, with electric, which changed that whole market. You do have the world's first and still only rocket that can land on come back and land without destroying the booster. And I think a lot of people don't realize what's going on there. Each engine in the Falcon 9 has enough power to lift the Falcon 9 sat with only a small amount of fuel in it, and it can't be throttled down below that level. So to land, as it does, it has to completely exhaust its fuel as it touches down. You've got to coordinate the use of the fuel and the point of landing perfectly, because if you're half a second too early, then you're going to hit the ground too hard. If you're half a second too late, you're going to take off a bit and then fall down, and you haven't got any power to control yourself, so, you smash. So to get it precisely to the point that it lands as it runs out of fuel is non-trivial engineering. And whether he's responsible for it or the actual mathematics of that or not, or, you know, a whole team inside SpaceX more likely, that's a significant engineering challenge. And people seem to have no idea of what goes into doing engineering. So on that front, I put him well above the other other handful.
So that sounds, yeah, and that's absolutely. I mean, there are negatives as well. Of course, explore a lot of those. One of them is, you know, the others, all of the others you mentioned are quite benevolent. He's not at all. In fact, you know, he's opposed, for example, any attempt to tax wealth, because he sees that, you know, if you've made the money, you should be able to hang on to it. So he's not, you know, he might see himself as being benevolent in these, he's gifted all of these inventions to society. But he's not benevolent in that, you know, he doesn't really care too much about poor people, I don't think.
I'd have to give Buffett some credit on that front, because Buffett is the one who came up with the idea, you give it all away before you die, or virtually all of it. And he still lives in, I haven't been to Omaha, but I believe he still lives in a very modest, like, three-bedroom style house there. So he hasn't gone for the ostentatious lifestyle either. But I'm not going to let Gates get away with that, because I want to come back to the actual design. Now, people credit Gates with Microsoft. Yeah, I spent 30 years as a, about 30, 20, 20 years as a software reviewer. And I saw Microsoft wipe out good products all the time, replacing them with shitty ones. And the thing which gave MS-DOS, gave Microsoft a start, was the operating system for the PC software, PC-DOS. And he didn't write it. The story behind it is that there was another program called QDOS, and wait for it, QDOS stands for Quick and Dirty Operating System, which was designed by another engineer to control an arcade game. And when Gates found out that either he or his programmers couldn't pull off the design, they managed to persuade this guy to write it for them for a fee, I think it's something like $10,000 back at the time. That was like, you know, maybe $150,000 now. But he didn't innovate that. That was something innovated by somebody he purchased into the company. And then you had so many programs that were, I think, genuinely innovative. Like, for example, my favorite databases. One was called Zim, which uses what's called the entity relationship model. And that was just getting its foothold at the same time as Microsoft came out with Access. The other one I like is one called Advanced Revelation, and that became Open Insight. And that was making the transition to Windows at the same time. That uses what's called the PIC database structure, which is far superior to the flat table system. Access came along and nobody bothered buying databases anymore, and it crueled the entire industry. So I have to see Gates's contributions in terms of innovation that could have occurred with him and without him. I think he's a net negative.
Right. But he's doing good now, though, isn't he? I mean, he is. You can't say he's not benevolent in his old age.
Yeah, okay, but
obviously trying to implant stuff into ourselves.
Well, that's right. The viruses and the 5G towers and all that sort of stuff.
All, yeah, he's behind all of that. Obviously.
Hello out there. You
know, yep, they're listening, Steve. They're listening to us.
Yeah, but in terms of creativity, I don't rank him as an entrepreneur. I rank him as somebody who organized a successful commercial invasion of what used to be largely open source mentality in computing at the time. He was the one who managed to wipe out all the rival innovations to get us to the stage where it dominates. And over time, I've got to give Microsoft credit for improving the quality of its software over time. So when I first wrote my first review of Word, it was so critical that the distributors sent 61 objections to my review to the magazine I wrote it for. And every last one of the 61 objections they made, I could counter. For example, this is a fun one. When you wanted to save a file, what do? You hold down the control key and type the letter S, correct? Okay. You type the Microsoft Word, you got which style, ? They used the control S, which was their standard, so that you, in Word, so that you, rather than saving the file, you had to say which paragraph style you wanted to impose and type it in.
Right.
Holy shit.
Well, that was a while ago, wasn't it? Anyway, let's get back to Elon Musk. So, absolutely.
So he's genuine innovations in manufacturing, which rules out the other file.
Right. So is he a genius?
Coming up with new ideas, or coming up with ideas that nobody else thought was feasible, and pulling it off, that is when you get beyond the stage of being when you create a whole new field. He's definitely an innovator. And if you come down to looking at Schumpeter's definition of what an entrepreneur is, it starts off being somebody who's got a good idea but no money. Now, effectively, the stories about his father's wealth, I think, are a bit like Mark Twain's death at the time, a bit exaggerated. He certainly has I don't think he got to start by being wealthy in the first place. He managed to make his investment out of Zip2 and then PayPal and made a fortune out of that. So he managed to get the idea by innovation rather than borrowing from a bank, which was Schumpeter's vision of an entrepreneur. But good ideas, definitely, and carrying through on them, definitely. And the thing with the unifying concept that I can see behind all the ideas, guess what it is?
They're a bit out there.
Establishing a play base on Mars.
Okay, here we go.
You need electric cars. Okay, there's no air to burn. The cars have to be electric.
Okay, so let's talk about all of that out of this world stuff in just a second when we come back.
Okay.
After the break, Debunking Economics podcast. You are listening to the world's number one Elon Musk fanboy, and he will be expanding more theories about how fantastic he is after the break.
You are me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Debunking Economics podcast with Steve Keen and Phil Dobby.
Okay, so Elon Musk, we heard in the first part, Steve thinks he's fabulous because he is an innovator, he's a manufacturer, unlike all the other multi-billionaires that we've seen who basically make software, by and large these days. And of course, AI is a big part and parcel of all of this as well. Is he going to have quite a profound influence in the AI world? He is, of course, experimenting with trying to connect our brains to computer software as well. I find that a bit scary, the idea that I'd have something in my head that comes from Elon Musk. I might, I presume.
Can you help the audience here by popping up on screen now and taking your lenses out?
Okay, so I do. Yeah, but those are.
Touche. You deserve that. Those who don't know, Phil is now working with artificial lenses in his eyes, which he absolutely raves about.
Yeah, I know, so, but they are just there's no functioning part to them. They are just a lens that's been stuck in. I mean, it's not. I don't turn my ear and, rewind what I've just seen, or it's not, as far as I'm aware, it's not being transmitted anywhere and used I'm not going to be appearing on Channel 5 anytime soon. This is Phil Dobby's secret life that he doesn't know about.
It is a bit scary. I will agree it's a bit scary. Mm. But at the same time, the amount of the main barrier between us and the computer is the interface itself. We've got this incredible processing technology, which we're expressing using a keyboard, which is designed to slow down typists on mechanical typewriters almost a century ago, if not more. So I can understand the idea you wish to make it feasible to control mechanical devices without having to do anything mechanical to them. I've known people with serious physical disabilities who can't operate machines like we operate them. And this is being targeted at those people. At the moment, they've got the Stephen Hawking style life as far as they can go. But the whole unifying concept behind all of this stuff is to get a base on Mars.
Yeah, so tell me about that then. So he doesn't...
You've got to have rockets to get there. That's number one. Yep. Okay, so SpaceX. Yep. You can't get around on the surface of Mars with a petrol car. You've got to have an electric car. Okay. You can't stay on the surface of Mars. You've got to dig tunnels, okay? And you don't want to have humans going out operating in the environment. You want to have robots, which have got dexterous hands and can do the same delicate stuff that humans can do with 11 degrees of freedom.
So
all this stuff.
Right, no, so I know most of my friends have moved out of London for a better life. What's the, now live in Surrey. What's What's the motivation for moving to Mars exactly?
I don't know his motivation. His basically is the space thing. You know, we read about this in science fiction books. Why aren't we experiencing it? Hint back to Elon Musk.
But what good does it do the humankind or the planet or the people who go there? What's the main purpose apart from the fact he sees it as a challenge?
I don't know whether he's thinking this, but mine is this: survival of human civilization.
Right, but if we had to live on Mars, we'd go, well, what's the point, wouldn't you?
No. People would have said the same about going to America 500 years ago.
Well, that's a good point.
Okay. It's a good point now because of the shit the Americans did. Okay. Touché.
Apologies to our American listener. I'm only joking, of course.
He's been to America recently and experienced the worst of Chicago, didn't you?
No, Chicago's just a shithole, isn't it? Anyway, yeah. Look, okay. Carry on. Sorry.
Okay. If we don't, one thing we have learned through the last quarter millennium of fossil fueled civilization is that, and among the many things we've learned, we know that the sun will expand until such a point that the radiation it gives off, forget about global warming, forget about anything humans do, will boil the surface of the planet. And that's in the order, it's in the order of the, not to the time to the dinosaurs, about five times as long as that, roughly. But we know that if we don't do something, all the life on this planet will be eliminated at some time within the lifetime of the planet so far, which is about 4.6 billion years, within less than another 20%, life will not exist on this planet. So if we truly care about life, we have to get off planet at some point. And why not now?
Yeah, because life on Mars would be, first of all, it would be very expensive. It would consume a lot of resources that we could be spending on other things. And there's, you know, literally no atmosphere. I mean, what is the point of living if you're going to live on Mars? You can't go outside. You can't. What is the point of living on Earth?
This is my perspective. What's the point of living on Earth if we make it uninhabitable for humans?
Well, there we are. That's my point. That's my point exactly. None at all. But then the human race finishes. I mean, why perpetuate human life if there's really no point in living?
I'm going to leave a bit of a pause there. I'm really quite surprised what you're arguing.
Because it's going to be generations beyond me, but I mean,
It could be this generation. Right. Okay, this is the point that why I'm working in climate change.
Are we going to get to Mars in this generation?
Potentially.
Are we going to have
one generation is 25 years. I think we won't make it. I think we'll wipe out our capacity to have advanced civilization on this planet before he gets there. Okay. I truly, unfortunately, if they had asked me to gamble whether humanity is going to make it to the point where we get off planet before we destroy the habitability of this planet, I would bet against that. I think we're facing what science people call the great filter. And I think it was Enrico Fermi who first asked the question, where's everybody? An advanced civilization would be able to populate the entire galaxy in a matter of a couple of, it'd take a million or 2 million years for an advanced civilization to be able to be over the entire galaxy traveling at less than relativistic speeds. So the fact we didn't find anybody said, well, what goes on? And one of the answers was, well, maybe there's a great filter, something which stops intelligent life getting to the point where it can leave the planet. And I think we are facing that great filter. It's called climate change, and I'm very skeptical that we will survive it. But if we don't survive it here, the only way we can hang on to the knowledge we've accumulated is by getting off this planet.
By going somewhere where the climate is even more inhospitable.
Yes, because if you don't take care of things on Mars, you die.
Yeah, well,
First of all, you've got to create your environment on Mars, and secondly, you have to respect it.
So if you had to live underground on Mars and create your own oxygen to survive, why couldn't you just and the Earth is uninhabitable, why couldn't you just live underground on the Earth? Why do you need to go all the way to Mars?
Because people would find out where you are and kill you and take it over. I mean, I have become more and more cynical about the lack of capacities of humanity over time. And I look forward to seeing if we start seeing climatic breakdown, what we're going to do is not do the correct thing and stop consuming coal and reduce oil and start rationing. We're going to start killing each other to get the remaining resources.
Well, I could see.
If you put a bunker on Earth, somebody will find it, kill you and throw you out, and then they'll be killed by the next person who comes along. And the next person that will inhabit that will have two legs, two hands and tail and be called a kangaroo.
Right. So I can see what. So you want to be on this ship with Elon trying to escape.
I've done too well.
Are you escaping from the planet or are you escaping from humankind? So So we're saying we want. So we're saying knowledge. We're saying on the one side we're saying we want to we want the human race to survive. On the other side we're saying we want to escape the human race.
Well, what I want to say, we want to escape the foibles of the human race, and those foibles are to be more focused on fighting each other than preserving life on this planet, which is what we've ended up doing. If you look at the history, I mean, I just had a bit of fun. I left Budapest last week for the final time after my 6-month stint there working at the Budapest Center for Long-Term Sustainability. Very enjoyable. And I did something I wanted to do but I hadn't made time for, which is go and visit the catacombs in which they apparently held Count Dracula, Vlad the Impaler, for 20 or 30 years of his life. So I went down and had a look at it. Now, the entire history, just I didn't need to see this, but it's a nice reminder. So-and-so invaded so-and-so. Somebody else put the forces to stop so-and-so invading so-and-so. It was just a litany of our warfare against each other.
Mm.
And we've done that without regard to the
whether we still are. Yeah.
And we ignore the other animals on the planet. We just, you know, we don't even think about the ones we've driven extinct. We then breed the ones we want to eat. There's no respect for human life. And no respect for life itself in the culture we've developed on this planet. Now, if you applied the same rules on Mars, you'd be over in a week. The only way that Mars is going to survive as a colony, self-supporting, would be to have absolute respect for life, absolute respect for the environment, and absolute respect for the knowledge we've accumulated, the technology that we've accumulated over the last 250 years in particular. So yeah.
You're still humans.
We learn a different lesson.
Yeah, but the lesson would be that if you've got a whole load of people in a confined space, they're all going to go crazy and they're all going to kill each other anyway.
We've
got to change human nature. Maybe that's why it's putting the chips in our brains so we don't think too much about killing each other.
This is a conversation that I see so often. if you're an engineer, you've got to keep on working each of these elements out. So, like, for example,
right. You're using resources to do it.
Hang on. You're using resources for how long? You're using enough resources to put them in a ship and send them to another planet. Now, once you've done that, unless you can produce the same stuff on that other planet, you're not going to be taking any resources from here anymore. In fact, if you continue to taking resources off the planet now, your project would be a failure because as soon as that stream shut down, so would your colony. It has to be self-supporting. So it's a case of creating enough resources to enable the base to be established and then grow from that point. And then
I don't think this is Elon Musk's thinking, is it? So because I mean, he, I think he,
yes,
I,
it
I,
is.
I think he wants, so he Elon
but
Musk
but not about
Elon,
climate change. He's wrong about climate change. I've seen. He's wrong on that.
Yeah, and also believes there's limitless resources if we apply it right. So in the introduction, I played a clip from him talking at Rishi Sunak's one-day distraction event that he held, and you know trying to avoid people realizing just how unpopular he is as a prime minister. And Elon Musk was there talking about artificial intelligence and saying that you know with artificial intelligence we have this ability to be able to do anything irrespective of resources.
Even on that front, you should realize that because you don't have energy into the machine. Well, this is the thing. He's not as stupid as most people I know who've studied economics, put it that way. But yeah, but there's some stuff, and off with the fairy stuff about population having to continue growing.
Yeah,
his own
off with the fairy stuff. You've just been talking about going to Mars.
The only way, I don't think we're going to make through the great filter, which I see as being climate change. Unless we have an outpost which can hang on to the technology, because what Nate Hagins calls the great simplification is going to happen on this planet. We don't realize how incredibly important the scale of our operations are for the nature of our operations. So that, you know, we're talking through computers using microchips that are sourced from sand that comes from somewhere in north of Scotland. It's ridiculous.
And so when you were talking about, I know the thought going through my head when you were talking about how the interface with a computer is a keyboard and that slows everything down, in my mind I was thinking, that's not such a bad thing, is it? You know, because as we try and do more and more, we are ultimately going to use more resources. You know, so artificial intelligence, for example, in itself, and we talked about this in the past, is a big user of resources.
It has to use energy.
Yeah, and it's ramping up server farms to do stuff that probably isn't that important, but we do it because it can be done. And I wonder whether there's a bit of an element of that within Elon Musk, that he does stuff that can be done, but is it the right thing to do is the question.
Well, this is when I don't care whether he's got the right idea in his head or not, so long as he gets to Mars. a bit like the attitude that Deng Xiaoping had to cats. It doesn't matter whether the cat's black or white, so long as it catches mice. My version of catching mice is getting a self-sustaining outpost on Mars, so that when, not if, it's going to be when, we totally fuck up this planet for human civilization, and we become religiously anti-technology, which I can see happening in the future, and burn down anything remaining and persecute anybody who tries to learn. I can really see that being the culture we end up on the planet. At least there'll be a place on Mars, or at least there could have been. I don't think we'll get there. There could have been a place on Mars where if you didn't have technology, you couldn't survive. So to me, they were going to be like the monasteries of the Dark Ages, hanging on to knowledge as the knowledge of the Roman Empire was lost in those eras after its collapse. So that's the long term. The real reason I support Musk is I share that dream, and I think it unfortunately is going to be a dream, about having a civilization off planet, which means if and when we destroy the capacity for civilization, industrial civilization on this planet, there's another outpost which can maintain it and ultimately repair the damage we do to this planet, and then make sure we don't make those same mistakes in the future of fighting ourselves rather than trying to preserve life, which if we're the intelligent species on this planet, that should be our first objective.
So I've just come out with this great conspiracy theory. Do you think he's trying to push ahead with his Mars project by making sure that we are all going at loggerheads against each other? And that's why he's bought Twitter, because he's doing everything he can to make sure Twitter is the most violent online social media site, where unpoliced, where people can say the most horrific things unchallenged, and just to add extra animosity to society. Maybe we do need to go to Mars just to get away from Twitter or X.
It's not a bad thought. Okay, I can second that.
Because that's what he's done to it. But also this is very banal compared to what you're talking about. But I mean, just one question I want to ask before we go. I'm wondering whether he is, maybe he is a genius, or maybe he's certainly a good engineer, isn't he?
Definitely.
And so that, we can agree on that. He's lousy when it comes to marketing and computer interfaces, human interfaces. So I'm surprised. I mean, the only reason that PayPal did so well, it's because it was the first in the field. It was a dog to use.
It's a dog to use. Like, for example, they're still sending me messages to update my my account through my dead mother's landline.
Yeah.
And I can't change it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. The processes, because there's a myriad of processes. Anyone who's worked in the online space knows that. There's the online application space, myriad of that have some sort of consumer interaction, a myriad of possible use cases that you have to accommodate. And I don't think they've been through that whole process at all in PayPal. So it's surprising you got so far with that. With X, it's just the stuff that you could do before. I mean, first of all, just the name X. He had a brand. I use TweetDeck, which I now have to pay for, which is why I've got a blue tick, which I don't like very much. But I've used TweetDeck because I can bookmark and it's easy to share stuff and follow stuff. So to find TweetDeck, it's now called X Pro. If you type X Pro into Google, he doesn't even come up. I've got to type in TweetDeck.
I can wonder why. Yeah, what sort of X are you after? Male, female? Bi?
Well, there we are. You see, you've got to make sure you got your safe search turned on. But and then it's broken. I'm paying for stuff that just can't do stuff that it used to do before. For an engineer, because he sacked everyone, no one's maintaining it. So he's not very good at that. And then Tesla. China is now, what's the company in China now that's making loads of cars and making twice as much money as Tesla now? BYD, that's the one, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So I think Tesla's days probably, as market dominance are going to disappear as well. And that's because he's not a CEO. He's a scientist. And you need somebody who's looking at the market competition and tweaking stuff. You might be great at the innovation, but you need to tweak it and make it better and look at the competitor, and all those moves are quite small. And he's not capable, that's mundane. He would see all that as quite mundane and a waste of his time. So he's very often in the wrong job, isn't he? He shouldn't be in charge. He should be the chief scientist in all of these companies.
except that the person who stops things happening most is the managing director.
Yeah.
So it's good to have, and I understand a lot of what's happening is attempting to make X into, I think it's called Weibo, the Chinese version, where everything is done using the one application. So he's focusing more on that. But that's a mistake. I mean, things like naming it X, for God's sake, Twitter was a good little name. Mm. No argument about mistakes and errors like that.
It was called X because that was his first bank. Was called X. So he's it's ego.
That's when you come into saying a certain amount of ego is unavoidable when you lead the entrepreneurial life. And that comes back to partly, what are entrepreneurs like as people? They tend to be, hexagonal blocks as people are trying to fit into squares or circles. And you're just in an uncomfortable fit and you go out and do your own thing. And then that means your same personality traits that would make you an entrepreneur can also make you sometimes a bit of a quirky manager. And certainly changing Twitter to X, I mean, that's just him saying, I made X in the first place. I'm going to, X is going to be my symbol. There may be some other weird little reason that comes out of the Asperger side of his brain. We'll know one day. But yeah, that to me, not his finest hour, but the finest hours are in manufacturing and we need that desperately. And he's compared to her what the other billionaires have spent their money on, Facebook, Meta, Amazon, all useful. I hate Facebook, as you know, but they're all useful within the realms of social media and so on. But nothing that transforms the nature of our actual physical existence. And as much as people try to say we're moving to a virtual world, if we're in a virtual world, no physical stuff, we're going to die in 38 hours. So, it's crazy to...
Well, perhaps we'll be living on Mars in a virtual environment that is just like living in, somewhere quite pleasant in the UK.
If an engineer is doing this sort of stuff, at some point somebody says, what's the livability of this device? Okay. How long can you live there? What's the mental... See, engineers try to work out the parameters that makes life possible. Economists assume they already exist.
All right. A good point to leave it on, I think. I don't know if it was solved anything at all. I mean, we didn't talk about, his politics. I mean, he is a strong libertarian, of course, and I always see...
Yeah, that I say...
Libertarians I see as being a polite way of saying, people are able to make their own choices irrespective of the impact it has on anyone else.
That particular point, I think it's a nature of, again, becoming wealthy. Who's going to attack you, the left or the right? And have enough attacks from the left after a while, I can see that pushing somebody's politics in a right-wing direction. It's unfortunately part of the territory.
Yeah, unless you've got a broader view and you actually think, well, why are they attacking me? But
And that's what should happen, but it doesn't, unfortunately.
All right, very good. So are you as much of a fanboy now as you were, say, 5 years ago, or have you changed your tune a little bit?
Oh, I'm just aware of his quirks. And I'm a fan of what he's attempting to achieve. I saw him asked on the show once, why SpaceX and why electric vehicles? He said, well, it's obvious we've got to get off the planet. We've got to stop consuming fossil fuels. Now, that's not saying I'm going to make a large amount of money out of this. So this is a market niche that I can see. So what I see is driving him in is this is going to sound weird because he's the wealthiest person on the earth and he's not doing any charity. But that's the ultimate altruism, to make your decisions about what to do with your money based on what humanity needs rather than what you think is going to turn a profit.
Right. Well, we will leave it there for now. And look, we'll see what people say. Okay. Wherever you're listening to this, leave comments. Yeah. Would you rather live on Mars or rather not live at all? You know what Steve's thinking, and I, you know what I'm thinking. I would rather not live at all. But then, I apply the same thing to living in Chicago. So, Mars is a long call for me. Tell us what you think. And we'll be back again for another one next week. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, mate. Bye.
The Debunking Economics Podcast.
If you've enjoyed listening to Debunking Economics, even if you haven't, you might also enjoy The Y Curve. Each week, Roger Hearing and I talk to a guest about a topic that is very much in the news that week. It's lively, it's fun, it's informative. What more could you want? So search The Y Curve in your favorite podcast app or go to ycurve.com to listen.